All right, I'm going to call the ADA board meeting for Thursday, April 3rd to order. It's a little bit after 10:02. So, Bren, would you do a roll call of the board members, please?
Okay, Mr. Wilkins.
Present.
Deputy Commissioner Pawlowski.
Present.
Ms. Steigard.
Here.
Mr. Hughes.
Present.
Mr. Bell.
Here.
Mr. Dick. Mr. Bruce.
Here.
You have quorum.
Thank you. Would you do the staff and public work?
Since there's a lot of people in the room, I'm just going to start and we'll mix you guys in and just identify your name and who you're with. Loudly, please. We'll start with you in the corner back there.
Bob, show in fear and gas utilities.
My name is Bruce Sack, MWH and IBU.
Bruce Robson, MWH.
I'm Clint Simmons, Aero.
Orion Fulton, Aero.
Jim Hestaff, Ada.
Lane Morrison, Actitype.
Dave Damansky, Bristol, Giuliani.
John Springsteen, Ada.
Mark Gardner, Western Financial Group.
Steve Klein, First Infrastructure.
Mrs. Blackford, Horton, Bittner, and Shiro. Chris Anderson, Ada.
Mark Davis, Ada.
Jeff Van Long, Ada.
Jerry Jude, Department of Law.
Let's start the back row here.
Sherry Peterson, Ada. Jennifer Hunting, CIAA. Shannon Miller, State Pipeline Coordinator's Office.
Mark Burns, DNR. Robert Ryman, myself. Tony
Erickson, ADA. Elwood Bramer, Alaska Journal of Commerce.
Karsten Rodrick, ADA.
Brenda Appleby, ADA.
Mark Zero, FNG.
Dan Britton, Fairbanks Natural Gas.
Kurt Warren, ADA.
Jim Gallagher, HDR. Ted Leonard, Ada.
Craig Kempinen, Ada. Can I get the public on the phone to identify themselves, please?
Nick Shimoniak, PC Capital.
Any other public on the phone?
Yes, this is Brian Albat, investor.
Any other public?
Jim McKenzie.
Any
faster? This is Jim McKenzie, CEO of UCorp.
And who was the young lady who identified themselves?
Alicia Carroll, investor.
Jack Russo, investor.
Any other public on the phone?
Who's the long investor? Okay.
Your name?
Nancy Wainwright? Yes. All right, thank you. Thank you. For us, we have a proposed agenda. Susan?
I'd like to propose two amendments. One is removal of item C. I understand that will be back for us at a future board meeting. That's the UCOR. For Bocan Mine Development and then Bocan without an L there. And then adding an item G, executive session, and it would be to discuss confidential matters relating to the Imperial Energy Project.
Have any objections to the amendment to the agenda? All right, so we'll adopt it. Item number 5, public comments. Do they wish to speak before the board today? I guess we'll go online first. Anybody online? Anybody hearing no one on the line? Anybody in the galley here? Gallery? You're very quiet today. All right, we'll close the public comments.
We're going to have to bring Teresa back.
Yes.
On the record, sir.
Oh, Wilson. Jeez.
We're Hail Mary's into our
body. Yeah. All right. Item number 6, new business. We have G1406, authorizing such loan to Fairbanks Natural Gas for construction of distribution system.
I move item A, G1406.
Second. Thank you. So the G-1406 is before us. Ted?
Yes, Chair. Resolution G-1406 is to provide a loan to Fairbanks Natural Gas for the 2014/15 expansion of its natural gas distribution system. This loan is made through the HCS CSB 323 authorization that we received last year in statute passed from the legislature authorizing us to provide financing for building an LNG facility and for providing support and financing for distribution systems in the Fairbanks area. If it's the board's desire, I could request that Mark Davis come up to the table to give a presentation on our underwriting of this loan. And then we also do have representatives from FNG here to answer any questions that the board may have of them for this loan. And it is for $15 million for the FY14 expansion of their distribution system.
Okay.
Mark, would you please come up?
So for the record, my name is Mark Davis, Deputy Director of ADA. What you have before you is a request for a loan to Fairbanks Natural Gas, which is going to be soon a regulated utility that serves the certificated area within the Fairbanks area. And the purpose of the loan is for the initial development and build-out of their expanded system. Right now they operate a relatively small system, and they're looking for financing to expand that system. And so the purpose of the loan will be a 20-month fixed line of credit. It's essentially as a construction loan to get that going. And the terms change on whether they wish to purchase gas from the North Slope that would be developed by our plant, or if they decide not to, then converts to a more standard loan. And they've agreed to that conversion as a condition of the loan. So we think that this is a good thing to go forward. Fairbanks Natural Gas has a service area that represents a substantial amount of the demand by volume in the Fairbanks area, and that the expansion will provide a market for the gas that would be produced by the plant being developed in the interior energy project.
Okay. Any questions from board members? Gary?
So, Mark, so in layman's terms, this is a $15 million loan that's really interest-free for 20 months.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
And then there has to be some things that happen on page 11 of the confidential loan document.
Right.
For this to be then considered for long-term financing, and at that time, we would, the SEPs money would enter into what we charged for that long-term loan, the 0-3?
That's the term.
So far, so good.
Yeah, and then it could also convert to a different type of loan depending on what they've decided to do.
Okay. And in order for that to happen in the next 20 months, financial statements, yeah. They have to enter into an agreement to purchase at least a 0.5 Z of North Slope Natural Gas.
Right.
And then...
quickly is that agreement has to be, the take-or-pay agreement for the 0.5 MCF gas has to be done before July 15th. In essence, it's tying into the financial close of the LNG facility. So it's quicker than the 20-month time period. I wanted to point that out.
Okay. Let me make back that piece. So, okay, I understand that part. So we don't have to deal with the 3% or less money until, not today, that's for another,
right.
That's for
right.
Another time.
This is structured down so that the pipe can be put in rapid basis. Okay. And that money does not is not charged, so it doesn't go in the rate base. We don't want the consumers to be paying for unused pipe. When a pipe does start to be used, it will go into the rate base, and then once that's cash flowing, then they'll be in a position to pay the loan. So this is designed to get them kind of jump started. Because you have a problem if you need to put pipe in a very short season in Fairbanks before you have additional gas supplies available.
Okay. So let's talk about the 0.5B. Okay. So we want to have a 9B plant on the North Slope, and that's where we're headed, I think. Now, whether it's 4.5 and 4.5 or 9 all at one time. So now we've got our what amounts to our first customer at 0.5B. Help me, Ted, understand, how do we get all of FNG's business on the slope?
Well, that would be a good question for Dan when he comes up. But the goal is, and the way we've discussed this before, Gary, is that Dan has FNG has the equivalent of 3.5 to 4.5 BCF based in their full distribution build-out. So probably, and Dan can correct me, 3.5 more BCF to build out their distribution system. And as we stated in the earlier pre-feasibility analysis, it's critical for us to get that distribution built out, people starting to convert for that plant to bring in the lowest cost gas possible. So in essence, we're going to have to work with FNG and IGU with the financing we have to see how we most quickly build out that distribution to provide gas for the plant. And this is one way to do it. This is providing, again, as the statute was meant to do, incentives for the utilities to build out their systems by providing low-cost financing to assist with that. So.
Yeah, and the term as well for the record is that to purchase at least the half of B, 500,000 MCF. And you know, we would hope over time that they expand further and they buy more gas. But they're making a commitment based upon
the early projections,
and the AEA's figures line up with their projections. So we're in sync about what we think would be the initial demand. So we had a look at that.
So how do we drive the 3.5 plus or minus B to the slope and not sometime in the future they're going to come back for another load of,
yes,
of SB23 money.
And
attached to that request will be another take or pay of a build-out commensurate with what they're asking for. Is that correct?
Is our intent as we would negotiate with FNG or even with IGU as we move forward for that. That our position has been that any expansion or funding that we provide for the distribution system has to be tied to utilizing gas from the North Slope plant.
So how do we drive that business to the plant? And not have a stranded asset when halfway through this they decide that, well, we're going to bring it from somewhere else.
Again, in the term sheet, the only way that they can switch that would be with, as we always realize, an alternative source. Then the gas line comes through that we would allow both the utilities to switch, and then at that point in time, we believe that the mines and other demands would take over. It still goes back to that basic design. So FNG is committing to utilize gas from the North Slope for their distribution system until that point happens. And that would be the same thing with our loans with IGU. So how we drive the gas demand to the slope is through the financing that we can provide to assist with the build-out, that any expansion and the demand for that gas would then translate up to the North Slope through our loan covenants with any finance. Mark, would you?
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, this this is a startup system, so we're putting pipe in the ground before we really have a gas supply. So this loan is designed to accommodate that fact.
And accommodate to generate the demand.
Well, also the short building season, so we get the thing going. And then the parties have agreed to look at, re-examine this note. And it says right in the terms sheet, final terms will be negotiated based on the market conditions at the time. And then if we can't come to agreement, then it automatically converts to a note that they've agreed to. So that we're protected on a loan basis, that we do have an enforceable note. But we would hope, and I think F&G would hope too, that we will negotiate the terms based on the market conditions that exist in 2015.
And the expansion of their system in 2015.
Let me ask a quick question here, if you don't mind. Just for point of clarity and everybody on the same page, right now F&G has essentially a 1B plant that's providing the existing system. So this is going to add 50% volume to the existing system. And so there's an ultimate goal, demand of up to 4.5. So there's 3.5 more coming.
Exactly.
Is that correct? And did you have a discussion about the existing 1B plant? Is that always going to be in operation? Does it go to a standby basis? As we look at this, is 3.5 the ultimate that FNG ultimately could be incentivized to use out of the North Slope? Or would they ever consider the 1B that they're already using right now from the existing plant?
And I think that, to the chair, would be a question that we really need to ask Dan from FNG regarding that. The loan terms here are based on providing financing for the expansion with the understanding that the expansion must be the gas used in the expansion must be from the North Slope. We haven't negotiated that they would have to convert their 1 BCF plant since they have investment into that plant already to that gas. But we assume as more markets come open with transportation that F&G may look at that to use their plant for, and if we're providing low-cost gas out of the North Slope, that they would utilize more of their heating demand. But again, that would be a plan to ask Dan on what their future plans are.
So what we're talking about is 14 here.
Mm-hmm.
14 equals 0.5, so we now have our first customer. So my concern is that we're hoping and negotiating to know what size plant that's going to be on the slope. Somewhere here we're going to have to make a decision about whether it's 4.5 or a 9.
Ours is, excuse me, Gary.
So we say, okay, it's going to be a 9, and we order that equipment. And FNG comes to us and gets their 2015 money, and that's some number. That's 1B. So now we got 1.5B out of that. They didn't decide in 2016 that the Point McKenzie plant is a better place to bring their gas from. And they say, well, no thanks, we don't want any more North Slope gas. So what we have is a plant built for anticipated 9B of demand, FNG, IGU, Golden Valley. So we're now approaching 8 to 9B, but they pull out, so half of our anticipated demand from FNG goes away. Is that a possibility? I mean, and they make that decision. Not because they want to. They make that decision because of the economics of that decision. And that's why they're keeping the 1B going down at Point McKenzie.
Oh, you bet.
Because they want that alternative. That's good business. That alternative.
That is good business.
So how do we, or can we, lock in that 3.5 in some manner to make sure that we're buying the right LNG plant and they can't walk away from us? Are we always on that? Do we always have that specter hanging over us that they can just walk away and we lose a significant customer?
Well,
the take or pay stuff, I would assume.
It's still a take or pay, but Gary's right. I mean, we have to look at what size the plant is based on what type of taker pays that we're going to get, plus what we believe the demand is. And that is always going to be a challenge because the pieces that fall into that are more than just the demand. If, for example, how rapidly that they can build out, you know, is it economically viable to build out? And these are the things that we're looking at and still working on with the utilities. So in conjunction with this, as was stated in the memo, that we have our financial advisors, our consultants that are starting to work with F&G, IGU, and GBA on a full financing structure of the monies that we have, that we would be working with them on how to build out the distribution system and that allocation. So if they're committed to using our monies for the distribution system, that would provide reliability on us going forward on sizing the plant. And I mean, and that's going to be key. And before we get to that point, and the challenge we have is that we have to know how much is going to be utilized for the plant. And the first basic demand through the taker pays and come back to the board, and that would give us the parameters to make that decision between a 6 BCF and a 9 BCF plant. And how much it costs to go from the 6 to 9 if you don't do it, you know, right at the start. So we will have those factors, but again, we don't have all the factors until we go through the process of what the financial structure would be for the plant. And then we have a second loan with IGU that we're requesting that would assist us in finding out the total cost of their system, their total demand, moving forward with that. And all these pieces will be coming together in late this late fall before we actually sanction the final project. Again, our tool is that we have the SETS loans that we can utilize to do the taker pay. And the taker pays are the essential thing for starting the plant. Not on all requirements, but knowing exactly how much they're willing to put on the table to say they're going to buy no matter what their demand is. And what this term sheet is trying to work with F&G on is that under that, they are saying in 2016 that they will buy a minimum of 0.5 BCF no matter what the demand is that actually is from that part of the system, or they pay that now. And those take-or-pay contracts are the foundation for the size of plant and for the cost of the gas coming from that plant.
So as we march forward and consider sometime soon buying a $180 million LNG plant.
Up to $180
million. Big money, whatever it is.
Right.
So we have this cloud hanging over us, not only from FNG, but from IGU, from GBA, that they have an alternative gas supply somewhere else. And not a big pipeline. Let's just use Cook Inlet.
Yeah.
Somebody comes and says, well, we can do that for you cheaper. We'll expand FNG's plant, or we'll put our own plant in, and we can beat that North Slope and that 1,000-mile pipeline. So we're going to operate under that, and we're going to have to decide what size plant to order, knowing that IGU, FNG, GVA, those three big customers can walk from us whenever they want to and say, we're going to buy it somewhere else.
Well, they can walk from us for any future expansions.
Yes.
They can't walk from us for any funding that they utilized.
Oh, no, I understand that.
So, again, and we've always said this, Gary, that the community has to stand behind this if this project's going to work. And I believe that they are when they do sign those taker pays. And again, that is one of the things as the board starts balancing the risk of what size of plant is based on what size of take or pays that they come in through 2014 and their 2015 build-up. There are risks because of demand, and that has always been part of the project. The one thing I'd like to say, and I was thinking about this last night, that the benefit we have to remember to these loans for IGU and F&G is that we are building distribution out with this funds that does provide distribution either for our plant or for the larger pipeline or alternative gas, that no matter what we do on the plant side, that these loans provide low-cost financing for the citizens of Fairbanks for their distribution system.
So, I mean, I love competition, but I hate stranded assets. So those two lines cross here, or could cross, not this year, because we've got the take or pay here, but maybe next year, the following year, the next 4 or 5 years.
Or for what size of plant that we have and how fast we expand the plant.
Yeah. So I just want to have the understanding that as we move ahead and talk about spending $100 million plus, that we don't have guaranteed customers.
Mm-hmm. We have the basis of our forecast.
We now have a half a B guaranteed customer.
Yeah. And we will have, before the plant goes forward, and we've always stated something from GBA. GBA is a critical anchor to this project. And we've discussed with IGU, and I believe the IGU representative said that they are pretty much tied to this project, and they believe in this project. And I'll let Bob discuss this as we go through his loan. So there's also always been the very large risk, and again, this was risk capital provided by the legislature on the plant and on the demand. They, as we went through testifying, we've always stated that demand is key and that this is a stopgap project that does have large risk based on the type of plant.
And you said the risk is based on demand, and that demand is not demand at the meter in North Pole. The demand you're talking about is the demand at the flange on the North Slope.
Yes.
All right. Thank you. On page 6 of the loan document, there's a line that says reserve for LNG facility $85 million. I thought we had 35 set aside.
The funding that we have for the plant, and again, the way we're looking at this is we have the three sets of the capital structure would be $35 million from, and this again can be changed at point any time. Let me just step back for 1 second. Is that the funding, of course, that we have for the IEP is $57.5 million from the capital appropriation, the $125 million for low-cost financing, and the $150 million for bonds. So what we're looking at right now is in our initial structure that we're negotiating with the project sponsor is $35 million for the allocated from the capital appropriation up to, it's about $65 million was what we were estimating for SETS financing. And then the project sponsor was approximately $80 million mark, $82 million, just putting that out in round numbers. So we've added a reserve in there of approximately $25 million because until we, again, go through that structure, we won't know what the optimum structure will be for the financing of the plant. So when we put that into the loan, we're just saying and trying to show the board that we believe that there is at least approximately, excuse me, Gary, I have to get to that page.
Page 6.
Yeah, page 6 is that out of the 140 $1 million that we have in the sets, that we believe that up to $85 million could be utilized for the plant, and that leaves us $56 million of the SETS financing, not including the $150 million of the bonds, that we do have money to fund the initial loan for FNG and the initial loan for the IGU. Okay. And we still have funds available for financing for next year and also utilizing the bonds. So it was just trying to state what the capacity is that we believe we have in the SETS financing.
Okay, so help me then arrive at a number that equals $85 million. I know that we're going to take $35 million out of the 57.5.
Well, again, the $35 million is out of the capital appropriation. This $141 million is the amount of funds available in the SETS fund itself, not including the capital appropriation.
So the $85 million doesn't have anything to do with the $35
million? No, with the capital. Well, it does in the fact that that's one of the capital parts of the capital structure for the plant is the $85 million that we're estimating that we're going to loan or finance into the plant $85 million of the SETS funds.
Out of the SETS money.
Right.
That. Oh, I see. The SETS funding capacity. Okay, I understand. Now, this doesn't have anything to do with the capital appropriation.
No. This is strictly, we had $125 million of SETS allocated to financing of this project. Plus, we had another approximately $16 million of monies left in the SETS fund after we transferred out the $50 million to the trust fund. So this is the total amount that would be in the SETS fund for financing the IEP project, or it could be utilized for the IEP project.
Right, and the
for the LNG plant.
And the 57.5, Mr. Walken, is in the revolving fund.
I wonder if we could ask, I wanted to ask Dan a question about, it says confidential, but I think we can at least talk about it.
Well, is it financial? We could.
It's not about money, it's about mechanics.
Sure.
Good morning.
Morning, Dan. Could I ask?
I wanted to state his name for the record.
Dan Britton with Fairbanks Natural Gas.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Here. So, Dan, I see that. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us. So, the sheet here shows your distribution plan.
Okay.
And so, so this $15 million allows you to do all these things that are on this sheet, which is a.
I don't have the sheet, but if it's a 2014 expansion, yes.
It's this. It's just with your little C4s and C1s and all.
Yeah.
Excuse me, could you put your
card
on mute, please? Someone on the phone is from a UCOR investor, I guess, is not on mute. So please, everyone, verify that you have your phones on mute. Sorry.
And I guess my question is just more of a Fairbanks and then from the loan package. But so what you're saying is that $15 million helps you build out C1 through C9 in 2014?
That's correct. So we're getting a bit of a late start. So that's one of the reasons we've got 2014, 2015. But the $15 million will allow us to build out this plant.
So that's somewhere along the line of 2,500 residents is added?
Yeah.
Okay. I just want to clarify that because it's nice to actually see it in black and white what you're planning on doing. And when we met with you back, whatever that was, last spring, you said that you anticipated to build almost all of it out in 2014 and 2015, and here's the beginning of that.
Right.
So, I just wanted to clarify that for the record because it's aggressive and it's welcome.
Thank you. We've started the permitting process. We've been submitting permit packages to the DOT for many of these, so we haven't just been sitting waiting. We have started to get some of the ball rolling to try and be as ready as we can if this loan package is approved.
Thank you.
Yeah, just hang out there. There may be other questions. So any other board members have some questions? We haven't heard from Mike. Any from Mike? Online, Mike?
Sorry.
Are you there, Mike?
Yeah, I'm here, Dana.
Okay, we got you now. Do you have any questions?
Yep. I lost you a little bit in the paper shuffling in the phone that wasn't on mute earlier.
Okay. Did you have any questions, Mike?
No, I'm doing fine. Okay. Tracking and appreciate it. I do have one comment, though, for the record. If I can.
Go ahead.
I'd just like to remind people that the exclusivity for the North Slope plant that we talked about is separate, that's limited to the CEPS funding that was directed by the legislature and the IEP money, but the board has supported other financing for FNG out of our other programs that I don't believe is limited to the North Slope facility. I just want people to know that we're doing everything we can in any way we can to support development of energy in the interior. But that the IEP money is limited. And I agree with the policy direction that Ada is headed in regards to that right now.
Thank you, Michael. Susan?
This is a little bit of a difference. And again, I realize the board has the ability to look at some confidential documents before approving the loan or considering it. But on page 2 of the memo, where it describes the project, in the middle of the page, it does say allow F&G to connect to 100 commercial and 1,250 residential services. So in reading the two, I thought that it might not be everything in C1 through C9. And I don't know if Dan's able to speak more specifically to that, if we need to hand him back the... Thanks, Mark.
I'm not sure where the 1,250 came from. It's in the memo. So,
and in the memo, it could be, and I believe it could be, what we estimate the original conversions would be from what we did in the application.
That could be the difference. The 2,500 is available structures. The 1,250 could be the expected conversion in that certain time frame. You know, residential, we plan on to be one of the slower conversion rates amongst the available customers. Commercial will happen quicker. Residentially, we get, you know, 50% 1 year, 20, 10.
Yeah, Commissioner, that is correct.
Thank you.
So, but it is possible to reach 2,500 and 100 businesses. So it's a substantial expansion.
Go ahead.
Another follow-up. Are you comfortable putting on the record the description of some of these areas so that people can review in our minutes, or anybody listening today could hear these plans? I didn't want to speak to it without your permission, but if you're able to describe it, I think people would be very pleased.
I'm comfortable describing generally what our plan is. I mean, it's subject to change as things go on. What we looked at in coming up with this plan was a number of things. One, we work with the city, we work with DOT to make sure that if there's road projects that affect an area, that we can get in and put pipe in at the same time. We do that. So a couple of these were picked for that reason. The others were areas where we could rapidly deploy to some dense residential areas where we have an existing backbone. So, yeah, we're okay with it being shared in the record.
So just to make sure, because that's a good question. So, Dan, can I talk freely about that page that shows you're going to lay 168,000 feet of pipe in these neighborhoods? I just want to make sure, because it's good news. And
you can talk freely about that. This is the plan that we have to use the funds that we've requested, is to serve these areas. Now, might we change from one street to another street within that general area? That could happen, but yeah, this is the plan that we propose to undertake, and it is good news. We're happy about it too, and so we're excited to share the news as soon as we can get moving.
Thank you.
And one of the things to the board is, as we go forward, Dan will be at the open house on the 8th, and we'll be discussing the plans and how to move forward with the IGU's distribution system and Dan's and also the facility, Gary. So.
Dan, when will you be ready to come to us for 2015-2016 money?
2 months ago.
Okay,
we're ready.
Okay, good.
We have the same plan that addresses 2015-2016, every piece of pipe that we would put in. So.
Yeah, I tell the board, Mark Davis, for the record, that obviously F&G has requested that we consider other loans, and we're amenable to other approaches by F&G for other lending.
But that will be tied into the full financial structure. That
what we wanted to do is get this initial loan done because of the timing of the pipe.
So I will tell the board that I've asked staff to, obviously these are these first two loans of both FNG and IGU are needed for the 2014-15 season. But I've asked them that before anything more substantial becomes a force, we get to see the big picture. Mm-hmm. We really need to know where our dollars are, what we have for dollars, and where we start thinking about how we're going to allocate those dollars. But we certainly don't want to lose out on the construction season or two while the LNG plant itself is being analyzed, commercial analyzation and whatnot. So hopefully before we see the next loan request, we'll have a more clear understanding of where all the dollars need to go to. I do have one question for you, Dan. So how does this play into the storage that you're currently, before we were with Ada with a loan in the storage facility a few months ago and your build out? How does the storage tie in, and do you need the storage the new storage facility for it to support this, or does the existing storage facility you have will that work for this first build out phase?
They're complementary to one another. This provides additional customer base that the storage would be able to serve. Our existing storage facility is not large enough to support additional firm customer base above what we do today. We maintain about 5 days of peak storage, so we've been adding interruptible customers that we could interrupt. But firm customers requires our new storage facility to be in place, so that the two are complementary. So that the storage facility it will work fine and stand alone. This provides some additional market availability that otherwise wouldn't necessarily be in place when the storage was. So this is complementary to the storage, but the storage is required to serve this market.
And so at the risk of bringing up a subject that maybe a lot of people want to talk about, have you when I look at the RCA ruling and service areas that both FNG and IGU have, has there been any talk about the West Anchorage?
About West Fairbanks?
Or West Fairbanks, West Fairbanks?
Not any detailed discussions. I think IGU is working on solidifying some of their plans. We haven't had any real look at collaboration, whether it makes sense for them to come all the way around our area or how that might work. So, no, not yet.
But you wouldn't be opposed to collaboration on that?
Yeah, no, I think at the end of the day, we still want as many people in Fairbanks to get service, and if collaboration makes sense, that we're open to those discussions.
Yeah.
We're happy to be moving into a direction of expansion and bringing more gas to more customers versus talking about it and battling over it. So we look forward to that.
All right.
I have a question.
Crystal?
Just on the demographics, I'm not as familiar with Fairbanks as obviously you guys are, but I was surprised to see there's about 2,500 residential, and then you differentiate between small and large customers. Am I safe to assume that small consumer is like smaller businesses, and the large would be maybe a office, like a state office building, because the economics really play into that if you have a large tenant.
Yeah, exactly. A small commercial would be, you know, a small office building, small restaurant, okay, those types of customers. The large commercial, it would be examples of Home Depot, Lowe's, or Fred okay. Meyer's, or you know, a hotel is usually a large commercial customer, okay. Schools, something of that nature. Yeah. And the focus of the expansion, and we focused as much as we possibly could, was on some residential okay. for using this money, is to get into these densely populated residential areas and get that pipe built out so we can serve them as quickly as possible when more gas becomes available.
Any other questions from the board?
Just a quick one. We used you were using the 50% connections, 50% of the homes passed to get to the 1250, I think. How far out is it before you get to that 50%?
The 50% is pretty quick in the first couple of years. Then there's some lagging conversion after that. So you're going to have 50% in the first 2 years of gas being available, and then an additional 20% in the third year, an additional 10% in the year after. So,
so that clock really doesn't start until the beginning of 16, roughly?
Until the gas is available, right. Really.
And then you'd run it out 2 years after that to get to 50%.
Right.
You have to apply a Fairbanks factor.
All right, good, thanks.
Dan, do you have a rough estimate cost, you think, for conversion?
The conversions are going to range, you know, if somebody's got if there's a home that's completed a recent boiler replacement or something like that, you know, they'll be in about the $1,500 range to replace their oil burner with a gas burner. If they're going to do a complete change out, it could be into the $10,000 for a residential to replace their entire boiler system. So it's dependent on what stage they're at and need. A lot of people that are at the $10,000 level are considering that expense today regardless of the gas. They're sitting with a 25, 30-year-old oil boiler. And you know, my home, I just a year ago changed out my oil boiler with a new oil boiler. So they're, you know, a lot of people are being faced with that decision regardless of, and if they can get the opportunity to make the switch to gas when they do that, it's much, you know, a lot better.
Okay. Any other questions? All right. Hearing none, I'll entertain them. I guess we're ready to call for the question.
Mr. Wilkins.
Hi.
Deputy Commissioner Pawlowski.
Yes.
Ms. Nygaard.
Yes.
Mr. Hughes.
Yes.
Mr. Bell.
Yes.
Mr. Dick. Mr. Cruz.
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you. Okay. Up next is item B, G14-07, authorizing such loan period gas utility startup costs.
I move G14-07.
I second.
Discussion. Ted?
Yes, to the board. Again, this is another financing that would be under SB 23, and this is to provide financing to assist the Interior Gas Utility in starting up, doing their engineering and that's needed for them to actually start to build their distribution system. This loan is for $8.1 million. And again, this loan is being done to assist in moving the distribution systems in Fairbanks forward as quickly as we can. And the same type of structure with IGU is that this is a 20-month loan or financing that will convert into a loan in conjunction with their distribution build out in 2015 and 2016. And Mark Chair is here to give a rundown on the terms and answer any questions that the board has. And then we do have Bob Chepchek from the IGU, their chair, to answer any questions the board may have of IGU.
Why don't we, instead of waiting, why don't we just invite Bob to sit with us in case the board members have questions. Good morning.
Good morning.
Just for the record, please state your name.
Bob Chepsy, Chair of the Interior Gas Utility.
Thank you. Mark?
This Mark Davis for the record. This loan is a little unique because usually loans are for hard assets, like you just heard with Fairbanks Natural Gas for pipe. This loan is actually for engineering, design, and permitting. SB 23 expressly allowed the board to make that kind of loan. And the Interior Gas Utility is a startup gas utility authorized by the Regulatory Commission of Alaska. And so they've requested this loan to do that engineering and startup design. And they've been working with AA, and I think with this money they continue to work with AA as we look at how the IGU would like to service the area they were granted by the RCA. So the amount of money requested should provide the initial development so that we know what their system looks like, which is important for the development of the plant, to know, you know, what the demand would be on the IGU side of the utility equation. And so this is an initial loan. It's very similar in terms to the Fairbanks Natural Gas loan. Again, 0% for 20 months, being renegotiated at the end of 2015. And if the parties can't come to terms at that time, it automatically then converts to a 40-year note, as exactly like the Fairbanks Natural Gas loan.
All right. Any questions from board members? Wilson?
Mark. So what would you have for security then when you converted that to the 40-year loan?
Well, at that time, we would hope that they're more than just a stand-up utility. But the other thing we were talking about for possible credit is the some backing by the Fairbanks North Star Borough. And recently, the Fairbanks North Star Borough did vote to provide some credit backstop for the IGU. And so we'll rely on that if we need to. But we also think by that time they should start having some assets. This is obviously a little different. We usually don't do loans for design, but the legislature expressly understood this could occur. And so and I also think, you know, basically the IGU is a department of the Fairbanks North Star Borough. I mean, it really is a governmental entity. So in that sense, we're also lending into a well-financed government entity, the backup for this. See, there is a hiccup there that the ordinance that created the Interior Gas Utility said that the Fairbanks North Star Borough would not go into debt for this. But I view that as debt is in bonds and not to back up this kind of financing. We have had discussions with the council for the Fairbanks North Star Borough. And so that's...
The terms in your term sheet do explicitly say that the Fairbanks North Star Borough line of credit is not collateral for this loan. And so they've made it available as bridge financing, as support for taker pays, but it's there to help us finance. It's not a backstop for this loan.
No, it's not a direct backstop. No, it's not. So we really are hoping to get the IGU set up so that it can enter into a take-or-pay, which is the concerns Mr. Wilkins expressed. Mm-hmm. And a startup utility does present issues for the plant and issues for the board. The collaterals are all property equipment owned by the and all the designs that would be paid for by this. Essentially, I think if the IGU was unable to pay this at the end of the period, because it's 20 months quite a ways out, then there'd really be a discussion about whether the IGU is in existence.
Right, because you would own our designs, our drawings, our permits, and all the right-of-ways we have collected.
So then the question would be whether they really are a operating utility or not. And if they're not an operating utility, then that would be a matter for the Regulatory Commission of Alaska. And the issue of whether the IGU was functioning was addressed by three commissioners in the December 20th decision.
So just real quickly. I'm trying to understand what this all means, not being a finance banker guy. What and I'm learning about it, but So is there any value to the certificate itself? In other words, at the end of the day, if for some reason IGU was not to be able to pay back the loan, would ADA then be the utility? Would ADA then come in and have all these assets, as Bob indicated, and we'd actually be the operating utility, own the operating utilities then to do something with? Is that?
No, it's just a good question. We would not own the certificate, but we'd own all the engineering, all the...
The RCA controls that. We actually talked about whether or not that was an eligible collateralized asset, and the RCA is the one that issues that and controls that.
But essentially, the certificate would be, in a sense, stranded. The IGU would be saying, we can't pay, we've done all this engineering, we just can't go forward. Mm. And we're not hoping this happens, by the way. This is
no.
Contingency.
Yeah.
But just to clarify, so it's the IGU is owned by the borough?
Yes.
And the borough could not transfer IGU to ADA as ADA being the owner? I mean, what's the difference? They're still an IGU.
It's a component unit of the borough equivalent to the school district.
I mean... We sell telephone utilities. I mean, we sell power utilities.
That would take more municipal law than I have a background in, but I think it would be unlikely that the borough could divest of a component unit in the similar manner to which they could a non-governmental entity.
But if this should happen when there's a default and they're not in operation, then the certificate is not being used. And then there are procedures that would then go into effect with Regulatory Commission of Alaska for a resolution of that non-use of the certificate.
And whoever would take over the certificate then would need the design, the drawings.
And hopefully we would have those for sale.
Again, I'd like to say to the board that this is a different type of loan that we had, and as Mark stated, that this type of loan was specifically thought of as we were working with the legislature last year, based on knowing that there could be two utility systems and that there would be startup costs for a distribution system along with startup costs for a facility. So again, this is a policy legislative directed financing, and it was taken into account when the legislature set this SB23 or passed SB23.
So, just what's the other follow-up questions?
Yeah,
and then I'm going to go to Gary afterwards.
So, is the IGU capitalized at all?
Yes, the IGU has present time has grant funds. And it's up.
Current available balance is about $450,000 of unrestricted assets.
Yeah, our sheet shows $420,000. That's our analysis.
And they have $7.5 million
line of credit
from the borough that was passed
last week.
Last week.
And will we be in front of that line of credit or behind it?
I would assume that we're in parallel because our collateral is on the property and on the specification of the service.
That we're financing.
That we're financing, right.
So
we would...
And then they're going to be using that line of credit from the borough for what purpose?
Theirs is unsecured based on our ability to demonstrate ability to pay it back. The uses that were described to the assembly that I envision are bridge funding. For example, assuming you say yes here, that we're looking at 30 days or so to closing and financing, I would go to the borough for immediate spending so we wouldn't lose April, and then pay that back with the proceeds because it was spent on eligible project costs. Another would be as security for take or pay in the out years if we commit to 100 MCF a year in the first year because of what's happening at the size of North Pole, and we only sold 90, we would need cash to pay the other 10 and look to that as that. And then the third would be, as any operating entity, without cash flow, not having a fund balance for unanticipated expenses, we wouldn't look to the loans for that. We would look to the letter of credit for that. And then once cash flows start in 16 and 17, then you build up your own rather than rely on the boroughs. Are the three intended uses for which they approved.
And we've seen the business plan that takes us through the expenditures of 14 and 15 and the, I would call it the slow ramp up of revenue in 16 and 17.
Right.
Well,
we've seen a plan.
We provided 3 year through the North Pole area build out and 6 year through the entire build out. Okay. With
is that available to the board?
Yes. Again, this is not the detailed plan, because the detailed plan comes through this engineering and
we have a layout. We have cost estimates based on the miles of pipes that NSTAR laid, you know, on a unit cost. Mm-hmm. And so what we don't have are the modeling that lays out how big the pipe needs to be in order to get the pressures throughout our entire system and where they need to be, the exact layout of the pipe and the right-of-way work. But in terms of conceptual design, we have maps and all 6 years planned out. We have demands based on the Cardinal work that was done by ADA and AEA that shows how that those demands roll into revenues across the time. With a very similar build-out to what the ramp-up that Dan just described.
And those demands are in the detailed write-up
that we have?
That you have.
Okay.
And in fact, we can get you the rest of the all the engineering and send that to the board.
I'm not necessarily looking for the detailed engineering. I was just looking for how, where's the cash to keep things going until the revenue starts, and
that is going to be a challenge as IGG works through their long range plan.
Right.
But yes, we can give you the preliminary.
And I think my lack of comfort comes from the lack of any capital, any contributed capital, or somebody backing this operation besides just Mark.
I understand that. As I said, the borough ordinance that created IGU said that the borough would not go into debt and with regard to the creation of the IGU. So that ordinance stands there as an issue.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But I guess, again, as I would come back on this, is that the goal of SB 23 and the financing realized that we were going to take higher risk at the start in providing the initial startup of the distribution systems for the facilities as you build out the demand.
You're confident everybody will remember that.
Well,
when
we told them again, will everyone remember that?
No.
I'm hoping so, because, again, they put this financing into a specific fund that is not part of our revolving fund.
Mm-hmm.
So this isn't a loan that is based on a regular ADA criteria and our statutes. This was specifically put in a fund that the legislature could utilize to fund projects. So
it kind of sounds like a grant.
Yeah.
Well, it gets to the discussion of when this was before the legislature and the capital request was $50 million. I went to Juno and had it changed to 57.5, with recognition that there was going to be first year needs. And this represents, honestly, a compromise between us and the ADA management, rather than utilize the capital money now, is to have it be a loan, because there was both desire by ADA administration and to their sense, concern by the board on when should you use the capital funding that was available. And so this is the very reason that capital amount was changed from 57 to 57.5, is I can't play chess, but I can play checkers, so I can get a couple of moves ahead. And this is one that that last year I saw as a cash need getting going, and that's why the financing was structured the way it was out of Senate Bill 23.
There again, your area then is about 11,000 residents, is that right? 11,000?
Yes,
and how much of that can you delineate between a large and a small base?
They're almost all residential with some small and large commercial in the North Pole area itself. But okay. it's almost all residential. What you see is a high capital, low demand area is the area that we're trying to serve. So it's, you know, a couple $100 million for a total demand of 3B when it's built out across 6 years.
But it's primarily residential,
yep.
Then. Thank you.
Gary?
Thank you. A few questions. So I think we answered. The reason we're not asking for a commitment of these folks as we did for FNG is because of the nature of the loan. Is that correct? It's,
yes.
That's the next step?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Right. And I think the nature of the demand, we're working with them and will be working before July 15th. They do have to have a gas contract with the
matches the phase one build out, which is the core North Pole. We have already by letter and testimony in a number of places committed to an all requirements build out. We recognize that as our demand builds out, it fills that plant up north, and that we not easily but intentionally foreclose the opportunity for lower cost gas coming from other areas into the future, in order to say yes, indeed, our demand would come from the plant up north.
So when I look at maps with phase layout, green is phase one.
Yep.
And that is expected to be, you'll be in the dirt in 2015?
Summer 15. So you would likely see us back here sometime in the fall. So one of the things that was pulled out from our initial discussions was early order of piping. And so there's a lot of work between now and next summer in order to be digging and trenching in North Pole the summer of 15. The longest lead time will be pipe. And so once we've gone a little further on the engineering and what pipe will be needed down what streets, we'll be looking at a pre-order of pipe that is not covered in this.
I wanted to have Bob bring the board up to date on what the assembly has done, and you've already talked about the line of credit, so that was last week.
Yeah.
It was an event past 7-2, if I remember right.
Yes, the assembly authorized the administration to use the Interior Gas Utility to develop this project, have provided funding. Right now we've spent about $1.3 million getting to the point where we are, so if we didn't have anything, Commissioner Hughes, I would be very embarrassed. But that's why we can demonstrate what we're planning to do, how, and how it will pay, and that's been the work of about the last 18 months, and that's been supported by the Assembly. The most recent action was interfund loan line of credit, and some of that was because of my experience at the borough. I remembered lending money from the solid waste fund to the library in order to finance the project, and so we went and talked to them about it. Essentially a use of their fund balance across the 6-year build-out period while we didn't have a fund balance of our own, and it was a 7-1 vote. There was a little question and concern. Really the only amendment was that when we make draws on the line of credits, the assembly needs to be reported, and since I have to go before them quarterly and tell them what we're doing anyway, that wasn't a big deal. But it was they're, I would say, eager. They're supportive. Wasn't sure I'd get 7 votes, honestly, because people are always supportive until you ask for their money. And so it was nice to get 7 votes of, when it came down to money as well. Probably the biggest criticisms we've had from the assembly have to do with your question earlier, and if we have a 6-year build-out plan, that's a long time to get to Chena Ridge. And how how could we accelerate or do things to do that? And so that's on our mind as well.
So the status of the change-out program that the borough is going to fund, is that still in the mix?
The conversions or change-outs, they have money for wood stove change-out, and how that would roll into could you replace a wood stove with gas is uncertain. Two or three of the assembly members have been working hard on how could they put together financing for conversions. If I believe that a conversion program will be necessary in some manner to help people that can't write a $10,000 check. How that is, and how whether you can do it on the bill or you know, have some sort of program like they had years ago for changeouts from electricity to oil. Mm-hmm. I think there'll need to be some mechanism. I think it'll have to have some state help when you take 11,000 customers and 5,000 more, and you take 16,000 customers and you multiply it by $5,000. If you're going to take an average, that's $80 million. That's a lot of money to backstop on a bill, and so some program that backstops conversions to that magnitude will be necessary. There isn't one right now, and I expect that'll be next session's work.
So is the borough still considering using the solid waste funds to be the backstop for a conversion?
No, there's a couple of federal programs. There isn't enough money in the solid waste fund. That depends on how, where you are in your cell development. So you accumulate about $10 million, and then you close off a cell and make another one, then you accumulate again, and there really isn't. That one probably isn't a likely long-term source.
But it's still an active discussion.
Oh yes. Oh,
okay. And then would you just talk to us a little bit about your relationship with NWH and how that's going? This is more just for the board to know.
We have... MWH acting as both the owner's representative and essentially our staff. We still have the staff of all, you know, volunteers are the Interior Gas Utility, but as of January we brought MWH on, and they have put together the 6-year plan. They've put together the layout. They have some incredible financial modelers that you've seen their work on the other side. They're separate from the MWH supply team that you are seeing work on the plant. And so there are some times where I can't ask Mr. Kruzak to negotiate with his boss. And so, like, our relationship with the MWH supply team, Steve Hagenson and I still do that. But other than that, they are the ones charged with bringing on the design contractors, putting out the RFP for the operating partners, you know, engaging the right-of-way contractors, and our management role is to see that yes, indeed, it's happening and on time and on budget.
I'm a bit embarrassed to say this, but until I looked at this and the chair's question about West Fairbanks, I didn't know that was an issue. So, what? Yeah, I guess it's to you and to Dan at the same time. Are there discussions going on that makes the logical step to have FNG do the purple part?
Well, you know, I can cut a deal with darn near anybody. and Dan and I, Dan and I have talked. Where we left it last was, let's each get working on our own areas and come up with what we need to do, and not close the door for how we're going to partner. Potential partnerships extend to use of transmission lines, so that we're not duplicating transmission lines. Shared storage, so that storage we put in and they put in are available for people all over the community. Looking at who can get to places first, things as basic as, do we have a common set of standards? So there's a lot of places to partner once we get down the road, and we are both open to that.
So you're talking about what the chair talked about, West Fairbanks.
Is that a fair characterization?
Yeah. From our side, we're open to the discussion.
Sure.
We have obviously internalized a little bit in the last little while, and are focused primarily on what we need to do to accomplish our goals in the short term. But, you know, this is a unique system that we have now that we're going to have to live with, and it's going to be, if it's in our customers' best interest and in the best interest of the community, we're open to working something out.
And then RCA has to pass on that if you had a kumbaya.
It could be a contractual relationship for service. There are a lot of different ways to get home.
So Gary, just to expand a little bit about that, I've been a big proponent of the big three, we'll call it, IGU, FNG, and Golden Valley, to look at the fuel consortium concept, which would be shared, common ownership, shared storage, common ownership, shared trucking, so that the distribution systems are filled out. Everybody has a different need, when, where. Golden Valley's low demand is going to be different than IGU, which is going to be a little bit different than FNG. That put the three together and form that consortium, kind of like they do at the International Airport with fuel out there. They compete, but yet they understand that by having common ownerships of certain things or contracts to do it actually brings the cost down instead of having duplicate stuff. So, Bob, I appreciate your comments about, you know, where it makes sense and working, and Dan, you two working together on it.
Chris Brown from MWH is leading that effort after the result of the last meeting you guys held, and MWH Supply presented on that, and so there is some effort on that going on as well.
Okay, thank you.
Crystal.
Chair, I just want to kind of clarify in my mind something that Mr. Wilkin brought up is the ultimate end game. The state invests in this engineering and setting it up in the distribution, and then for one reason or another it doesn't all come together like we planned. Then ADA has the ownership of the tangible marketable asset, which is that certificate.
Not from what I understand, it wasn't the certificate, it would be the engineering, the permits, the right-of-ways, those assets,
okay.
but not the actual,
okay.
Because of RCA, Mark, and BABA.
Okay. Yeah. Even if we wanted to pledge that, we couldn't. RCA controls who is the owner of a recipient of a certificate.
Okay.
So just out of curiosity, fast forward, one day maybe the North Star Bill decides they don't want to be in the gas utility business, so we take a vote. If they wanted to sell it to Brand X, or they wanted to buy Brand X or something, a consolidation, or someone made an offer you couldn't refuse, would it take a vote of the people in the borough to approve the sale, and then it has to be then approved by RCA?
It would take a vote of the assembly. Approval of the RCA.
Okay. Did Wilson correct me if I'm wrong? Didn't when they sold the telephone, it took a vote of the people here.
Yeah.
Actually, the this is Mark Davis for the record. The Interior Gas Utility is an entity of the Fairbanks North Star Borough, but it doesn't have the legal authority to create an entity of that type. So it needed the permission from the City of North Pole and the City of Fairbanks, which gave that authority to the Fairbanks North Star Borough. And then the ordinance was passed after that. So the cities are still actively involved. And when you go to the assembly, they often show up.
They show up, and one of our board members is appointed by the City of Fairbanks, one by the City of North Pole, and one by the mayor of the North Star Borough.
Okay. Any questions? Michael, do you have any questions?
No, I think I understand the structure well. I'm good, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
All right.
Shouldn't we look at further at why this isn't just a grant?
Well, actually, I don't believe under financing that undersets that. Well, we'd have to bring up our...
It would have to be the capital funding. You couldn't do a grant under the SEPS program. You can do a 0% loan, but I don't believe you can do a grant out of the SEPS funding.
Yeah, under this agreement, they are going to begin to pay it back when they reach a cash flow. We need to renegotiate terms by the end of 2015 on that basis. If they're unable to do that, then we can take the collateral. I mean, so in the sense that a pure grant means if they can't do it, then nothing happens. we think it's actually better here, consistent with the legislative direction, to own those plans so that we don't lose the time for the residents of the area that AIG has been granted. If it doesn't work, then we've still got the plans. We can still find a vehicle, hopefully, and keep going. So that's really the basis of the loan. And it's consistent with what the legislature wanted. It's also consistent with Ada wanting to use this plant and wanting to keep getting gas to consumers. That is the directive.
And I guess to the chair and to Wilson is that, again, that this is a unique loan. Again, another, as I said, legislative directive loan, that the terms that the final financing would come in can, the board has very broad authorities in how you set up the terms of this financing. The goal of the $125 million was that they knew it was going to be long-term, but in the end, they would still like to have those funds come in to Ada, even up to 40 years down the line, for the SETS fund. And that's why they put the $125 million in as financing. Mm-hmm. So we have the ability to modify the terms to assist both F&G and IGU very broadly on how and when we get paid back. We have the ability to defer principal payments. We have the ability to provide zero interest for whatever time that the board decides, and the payment structure. It's very broad under this, and again, that's why it was set into the SETS fund and not our revolving fund. So the goal is to provide the type of financing that will assist with meeting the goals of the burner tip. And how we do that, that is up to the board. Again, as I mentioned in the memo, as we try to set up the complete finance structure for the distribution that we're working on, we are utilizing the SETS funds and the payments of those loans as collateral or plan to for the bonds that we issue. So we do want some cash flow coming from the SETS loans because they provide backing for the $150 million of bonds, state moral obligation bonds that we're utilizing. So if you made it a grant, even if you could, then that would put a little of a crimp into the full financial structure that we were looking at.
And in a grant, in a default, of course, then all the engineering, all the work, I think, has value to it, especially with doing a policy. So we'll revert back to the borough, and then we'd have to negotiate with the borough to use all that information. If we do it this way, if there is, unfortunately, a default, then Ada owns all that data, all those plans, and then we can look for somebody to, with the concurrence of the RCA, to continue that operation.
Susan?
Recognizing that the structure of IGU and F&G are different, recognizing that the one's already in operation in the community and IGU is at a very different place, I see that, but I think we're using the SETS funds as intended. And in my comments, I fully recognize that Mike Pulowski, previously working with Senator McGuire, is very well-versed and had done much of the footwork for the SETS funds. But I like that we're setting up something that is parallel, even with the differences that are there, and that our nature as Ada is not a granting agency. We're a financing organization. So I'm comfortable with the structure that we have, and also SETS was built with some tremendous flexibility. So the other loans that come before us don't have this kind of zero for 20 months. And I think we're using the tool that's in SETS as intended.
Chair, could I? Sure, make one quick comment. And again, as we talked about how we utilize the $57.5 million, that will come into play with working with IGU, FNG, GBA, and the project sponsor on
how to allocate that 57.5 and if we can use it to assist in storage for IGU. I'm just throwing things out that is going to come into play again as we look at the full financial structure of the plant, how the distribution comes into play, and what the chair said on the potential of assisting with, if there was to be a fuel consortium, the trucking. So again, this loan is definitely a startup loan. It is a risk loan that we would not do under the revolving fund, but we're given specific directive to be able to utilize this type of financing to assist in the distribution.
Okay. Gary?
I hesitate to say this because we're probably getting ahead of ourselves, but so there's going to come a time here shortly when we all get together to bake this cake and we decide where the monies are going to go and what we're going to charge. So do we have a way to know, we're going to make some loans out of that 125, and we're able to charge up to 3%.
For yes. Those,
by we, I guess that's Ada. Where does the money go? If we charge 3%, where does the money go? And if I think you have to charge 0.25 for administrative costs, but so
that is just for the bonds.
Oh, okay. So theoretically, that 3 could go to 0. Who loses when you go to 0? If it drives a better cost at the meter, a better price at the meter, whose money are we taking out of? Whose pocket are we taking it out of?
I guess you could say, in the end, you're just diverting capital that would go back into the SETS fund that could be used for other projects. But again, we were given very broad authority under that $125 million, to provide loans for distribution and gas to interior energy projects. So I don't think anyone loses. It's up to the board to decide what type of rate of interest, what the terms are in final to meet the goals of the IEP, which are to provide lowest cost to gas possible to interior energy as quickly as possible and as soon as possible. So
do our models, I believe they do, so we can plug in 3 or we can plug in 0, mm-hmm. and we can see what it means for the meter in North Pole.
We will be, yes.
We'll be able to do that.
You bet.
And so we can decide on that, and then we can decide on where the money's coming from.
And also it looks into the full, again, the full financial structure of how the bonds work and ensuring that it provides the backup for the bonds to bring the lowest cost. So, yeah, this is the biggest puzzle I think I've ever worked on in my life. But, but again, the legislature passed SB 23 because they realized that there was a very dire need for interior Alaska to provide this immediate relief and to build the distribution system up for the final solution for Fairbanks with a large pipeline or however it works.
Okay. So we talk about 3%, but really what we're talking about is up to 3%.
That's the way it is. Yes.
The family in North Pole benefits by the fact that SETS doesn't get some money put back into its back into the kitty.
It could.
Yeah, okay.
Again, we have to balance the cash flows needed to back the bonds and how you do that. But yes, under the SP 23, the language specifically states that the monies charged from funds utilized by the SETS would be up to 3%. They didn't set a floor, but they set a ceiling.
Okay.
Right.
Thank you.
All right. You're welcome. All I'd ask is I'd sure like to see this cash flow plan over the next 5 years. It helps me understand how it gets paid back.
And certainly.
I also still remain puzzled how we loan $8 million on a total equity of $200,000. If it is as important, which I agree with you, how important the project is, to me, there ought to be some form of capitalization with this entity who has the authority to provide energy to a large portion of Fairbanks. So with that, I'm going to have a problem voting yes until I see and I'm more convinced.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Bob. You've already got $1.3 million in it?
Yes.
So there's your initial.
But
is that right? Am I missing?
Yes. No, you're correct.
So you got 1.3 in it. You got another 400,000. So that's 1.7, roughly.
Yeah. Well, we have accessed a total of 3 million, of which 800,000 I haven't requested yet, as we work our way through.
Okay.
But some portion of that is been consumed or spent. I'm looking at the end of December numbers here.
Yes.
That are showing me an equity of only 270,000.
Right now, it's because I increased the value of the grant, the revenues increase. Our current equity is, I want to say, 455 or 473, something as of the end of March.
77 with 200,000.
There's been more assets put in since then. So
since December.
Since December, yes. Okay. Yes, sir.
I'm always pulling my weapon.
All right, so are we ready? Friend?
Mr. Wilkin.
Hi.
Deputy Commissioner Pulaski.
Yes.
Ms. Nygaard.
No.
Mr. Hughes.
No.
Commissioner Bell.
Yes.
Mr. Dick. Mr. Cruz.
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you. All right. So I think we're going to go to item D. Bob, thank you. D12-02B, revising the amortization period on finance agreement with the Department of Military Veteran Affairs for the Camden Alley Readiness Center.
I move item G12-02B.
And a second?
Second.
Thank you. Discussion.
Yes, Chair, and I can bring up Jim if I need to, but I believe that I can give a good explanation. This resolution is to increase the amortization to be repaid over 25 years, Jim? But this is to increase the amortization for the contract that we have. Chair, could I bring Jim up just in case?
Absolutely.
Because I would have a lot. But extend it from 25 years to 30 years for it. And exactly what happened is that we do have a contract with DMVA to have this loan paid back over 25 years. And as the Congress and the Coast Guard moved forward, they set the actual amount that they could pay on a yearly basis at amount that would actually amortize closer to a 30-year period. So we agreed to with the Department of Military Veterans Affairs to come back to the board and ask for us to extend our amortization period with the agreement with DMVA to 30 years. Again, we think that it's a good rate of return. We're getting a 7% on this contract, and extending it 5 years just means that we're going to get an additional 7% over that amortization period. So we believe that to assist the state agency, and also that it's just a good contract change for us to move forward with our mission of helping the federal government. And my understanding... on facilities. Let's say this is one of our powers is to help federal facilities. And again, once Congress sets the type of payment that they can pay, it would be very, very difficult to have the Coast Guard change what the Congress has authorized for their yearly payments.
No, that's exactly right. Congress set a fund. DMVA is requesting an extension to match that. And everything Ted said is spot on. They just went a little bit early for the numbers before final true-up and got a fixed amount. You can pay no more, you can pay no less than, I think it was $92,000 and some change per month. Oh, if I could, just one thing to say. Everything stands with the operating agreement. The guarantee of payment by DMVA is still there. The only difference is the change in the amortization period.
Wilson?
I note that it came in ahead of schedule and almost $1 million under budget.
Yes.
So that's not the problem.
No, it's not.
Great.
Actually, it's even better than that because we took $1 million change order that for work that DMVA was supposed to have and they couldn't get it done. We did it on time and still worked it inside that budget.
Good.
We have any questions from the board? Mike, any questions from you?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, did we ask for authorization for a road in the state in exchange for this?
Hindsight's 2020.
If you missed that opportunity,
what's a road?
Yeah,
I think it's between two.
No, Mr. Chair, it makes sense. Okay, thank you.
Any questions of the staff? All right, hearing none. Corinne, would you please call the roll?
Mr. Wilkins.
Aye.
Deputy Commissioner Pawlowski.
Yes.
Ms. Nygaard.
Yes.
Mr. Hughes.
Yes.
Mr. Bell.
Yes.
Mr. Dick. Mr. Bruce.
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you. Item number E is a resolution number G96-02, financial disclosures.
Move.
Second. We're on a roll.
And,
discussion, Ted.
Yes. And Chair, we actually do not have a new resolution in front of the board today. We really are coming forward to the board to seek advice in what direction that the board wants us to go. If I could have our personnel manager come up, Jennifer, and we could discuss it.
I will note a familiar signature on this yes. this resolution.
The original resolution.
The original resolution.
That was 18 years ago.
We weren't going to say that.
No, but I had to bring it up there with it. Looks familiar.
Thank you, Chair. The bottom line is that approximately, I guess, 18 years ago, that ADA's board worked with the APOC to provide financial disclosure reporting on its directors and its executive directors. And they were doing this based on a voluntary decision by the board. And at that point in time, APOC agreed to work with the board and for ADA directors and executive directors to provide financial disclosure through their system. Well, as things change, of course, the new APOC organ, or who's in the new APOC, or in the APOC now, has decided that since it isn't in statute, that ADA's directors and executive directors should provide financial disclosure through APOC, that we should not be going through their system. So what we're asking the board is how you would want to move forward. If the board still wants the directors and executive director to provide financial disclosures, and if they did, what type of means that they would want ADA to move forward with. So I just ask if it's okay with the chair to have Jennifer just give a more succinct rundown on that.
So procedurally, Wilson and I need to we need to remove our move our motion. We're a little quick on the draw. Sorry. So it's not really
a resolution.
Not really a resolution. Okay.
It says resolution to me. We can modify it. I think that maybe before, I'd like to get a little, put board members' views on the spot and get a little background.
on what he remembers about that signature.
that's a whole lot.
We should know before.
You know, the intent, as I recall, which I can't say that this was at the top of the list of the discussion, but we needed a mechanism for disclosure by staff that was dealing in significant financial transactions, and APOC was willing to be the repository of that information. And I think even to date, it's not reviewed by the board, it's just filed with APOC and away it goes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And basically there's a different management of APOC and says they don't want to see him anymore. And that's the shift.
Yes.
To me, the same logic was there, that people need to have an avenue to disclose anything that could in any way shade or temper or give the appearance of anything less than 100% ethical transactions.
Okay.
And just really quickly, and I'm not sure when the new ethics came into place, but ADA and ADA employees do have an obligation to disclose any financial interest which may present a conflict of interest. Again, it's not proactive where you're showing what your financial interest is, but they do have an obligation to report any conflict of interest. And if there are any, that comes to, I believe, myself.
Or Sarah.
Or Sarah, and then Sarah or myself, if we were to have a conflict of interest, then we would have to report it to the chair.
Okay. Thank you. I did speak with APOC's executive director, and he did advise, and I think you're right, Mr. Hughes, that it's a change, you know, passage of time, change in management, whatever coordination existed was lost. So they have asked us not to file with them. Their recommendation is, if the board would like to continue this requirement, that it be an internal document. I have talked to not all of the deputy directors, but some of them, about the requirement. There's varying degrees of feelings about it. One in particular feels pretty strongly that it's because they're not statutorily required to file, that it's overly invasive. The Ethics Act does require all of us, all ADA employees, to disclose any financial conflicts of interest. I talked to Mr. Dubé about that, but what the Ethics Act does not require is public review. It's not available for public review. So that would be up to the board then to decide, does the Ethics Act meet the intent? And if not, how do we want to proceed?
So correct me if I'm wrong, this really is about where to send the information to. Right now, everybody, executive staff, is filling this out. This APOC doesn't want it anymore. Is that correct? So everybody's doing it now. It's just, where do you send them to? Is that really the question here? If everything was a state status quo.
In the past, everyone has.
In the past, everybody has. And so it's really a question for the board. We want to continue it, and if we want to continue it, where do we send it, or just where do we send it now? What are you asking the board?
Whether or not you want to continue it, and then if you want to continue it, how we would report it, and
where
it would be stored.
But also, I mean, if we went the other way and said it's not statutorily required, we're just going to deal with the Ethics Act, that information that's collected is very different. So actually, in this discussion, it may be that we bring it back, you know, we raise the issue this time, we bring it back so that people can see these ethics forms, because it's about, gifts, it's about close relationships and supervision. It's a different kind of information than what we've got on the APAC. That it might be helpful for the board just in our next packet have a refresher on this is the APOC form as we know it, here's the ethics forms, mm-hmm. and which level of information do we feel is appropriate.
Right.
Okay. Discussion from board members?
Is there any chance this change gets board members out of filling out the form?
Yeah, that's what I was going
to say. Board members are by statute.
I'm afraid that's what you were
going to
say.
Is that a motion?
I guess we could bring a piece of legislation for it.
Gary down there to walk it through for us.
They're bald. They're original.
That would be smoke and fire.
One other comment the board might want to consider in this is that although our executive directors and deputy directors aren't currently statutorily required, they do hold positions that are comparable to other executive branch agencies who are required to have.
And Jennifer, did you have a chance to contact any of the other corporations yet to see whether they require anything? And that's something we could also do if the board was interested.
Do you know what they do with the railroad?
I know the board's required, commissioners and deputy commissioners required, but at the staff level, actually, it hadn't been posed quite this way.
So we can do a quick survey of the permanent fund, Alaska Housing, the railroad, and is it the student corporation? I'm trying to think how many. And Kubota.
All right. I think that would be a good plan. And then we can visit at the next board meeting.
Okay. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. I think Susan withdraws her motion.
Right? I'll withdraw my second.
Next up on is Interior Energy Project update from Ted.
Yes, Chair. I'd like to bring Mark Davis up for that. It's under his division, but again, this is just to be a really quick update, and again, we request to go into an executive session to talk about negotiations, but really quickly, sort of an update where my report was, is that we are continuing with the negotiations with MWH on the structure, and the financial structure and the structure of the agreements with them. We have 2 days of negotiations on that. We are working on the pad currently and what the best location for the pad is. We are moving forward very rapidly on the permitting. In fact, I was up in Barrow yesterday to discuss the North Slope permit, and I think that we have support from the North Slope for the facility. It was a good discussion with the mayor and the assembly last night, or the night before, and their permits moving forward on a good basis, and also the other permits that we need, the 404 permit, and we are also in discussions with gas contract suppliers to see which, if we could get a newer contract that has different terms. We are working again with the distribution entities, the utilities, GBEA, IGU, and FNG, as were shown in the two loans. Another critical area that we are still working with is the trucking. We have been in discussions with, for example, Carlisle and with Dan from FNG on working on the design of a trailer and hopefully purchasing a trailer that we could bring up that would be along the lines of what the chair said to increase the amount of gallons from the typical 10,500 gallons to 13,500 gallons at least, and we'll be bringing something to the board on an agreement with F&G to work on that. Mark, MWH is working again with GBEA and IGU and is making contact with F&G to work on
storage and the fuel consortium. And again, we have been meeting in the chair with the different parties to discuss that concept and how ADA could be involved in helping with bringing the parties together on how to provide the best storage combination and how to lower the cost of trucking as much as we can through maybe an investment through, for example, trailers with some of the capital appropriation. So again, all the pieces are moving forward. I think, as we said, through early summer and late summer, very critical decisions will be needed to be made by the board on the capital structure of the plant, on the financial structure of the distribution system and how we can play a role in that. And again, with always the goal of providing the lowest cost possible for the burner tip to as many people as possible, as soon as possible. Let's see, and Mark, would you want to add to that?
No, I think you've covered all the public information very well.
Susan?
I was going to say, I appreciate staff letting us know about that open house that's coming up next week. And I had the opportunity when I was speaking to the Fairbanks Chamber on Tuesday, and then yesterday when I attended the Alliance to repeat the details of that. So thanks for keeping us in the loop.
And then one other thing I forgot sharing. It took a little while for my brain to fire, is that we have requested from MWH, as they move forward on their portions of the plan and their financial structure, to start coming to the board at our monthly meetings to give the board an update from their perspective and to give the type of decision points that Gary has requested and Wilson and the chair on the no-go, the critical path, and we are working with them right now on the type of presentations that they will start giving at all of our board meetings too. Sort of goes back to when Gary directed us to have a GBEA here at every meeting when we are going through negotiations, that it helps gives the board the perspective from the other party, and that you got the board can also ask direct questions to the potential project sponsor.
Okay. Are there any questions from board members? Gary?
Ted, in regard to the feedstock negotiations, today the soap cycles 8 to 9 billion cubic feet a day of gas as they produce oil. And we want 9 billion cubic feet a year. So we want 1/365 of what they're handling today. I know it's crazy, but they should be paying us to take that gas. So when we talk about $3, I talk about zero. Mm-hmm. So I think we ought to get the gas for free and do them a favor. Having said that, what levels of state government, who's at the table as you negotiate or talk to the owners of that gas?
Currently, that administration has discussed issues with potential gas contract or suppliers. Again, you say the total gas, and one of the technical things that Mark, you or Jim could tell me better is that the gas that we are going to be drawing from is from the fuel lines and not from just the full gas. And I believe, according to certain gas suppliers, that there is a limit of the total amount of that gas supply, Jim, or could you discuss that for a second? And again, on administration, I'd also ask Mike Pulowski to jump in on the ability for the state to ask for a $0.
Yeah, Ted, thanks. Gary, we've started to look at the way Senate Bill 138 is structured and the opportunities for the state, and have made initial outreach to some of the producer parties and asked to be available as a resource and support to ADA. moving forward in those discussions. But the, about the most I can say about it at this point. I had a conversation as recently as Monday about it.
So we are working with Mike and administration on this as we discuss terms with potential gas suppliers.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mike.
Yep.
Was I correct, Jim, on the issue on the fuel lines? Or?
For the record, this is Chip Hensath, Deputy Director. The unit owners have advised us that they would not approve a tap on the main fuel gas header. And Director Wilkin is correct on the volumes. That fuel gas header supplies not only the North Slope production fields, but also taps for power. What you're referring to is the limit on the size of tying into a line that would go to flow station 3, and that we have not confirmed or denied that there's a problem in the volumes, but that's something that's a much smaller volume off of that header, and we have to make sure that the volumes were drawing do not interfere with flow station 3 production. So I think that's where you're kind of going, Ted. And we don't know yet. That's the answer. So biometrically, we don't think it's an issue. It is a very small
gas is gas.
Well, gas is gas, but
and they're using
volume too, so we've got to be careful.
And what you're talking about, they're using 400 to 500 million cubic, 0.4 to 0.5 B a day to keep field active, right? And what we're talking about is, it's a rounding error. So what we're asking is not a big piece of what they're handling every day. So anyway,
good.
All right, thank you.
All right, so that concluded with the IEP update.
You bet. All right.
I'll look for Susan for a recommendation.
I'm going to go into executive session to discuss the status of negotiations regarding the Interior Energy Project and to consult with legal counsel regarding those negotiations.
I second.
Thank you. All right.
Before we do that, I want to come back. I don't want to lose this. So let's cycle back to trucking. What's the next thing in a row for us to start to narrow down the cost of trucking to Fairbanks?
The next thing is to NWH start working with the GDEA and IGU to do an RFP to actually go out to the market and ask them how much.
April 24th. Okay, Mike.
And you guys are going to be in the ad for the
month. And Mike, can you get Mike in there?
Okay. Yes. Mr. Pulaski?